Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the DIASORIN full year 2025 results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlo Rosa, CEO of DIASORIN. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to the DIASORIN full year results. Today we have a busy agenda. I'm going to make some business remarks. Then our current CFO, Mr. Pedron, is going to take us through the 2025 financials. Our future CFO, Mr. Alberto, is going to discuss about guidance 2026, and then collectively we're going to take questions. So let me start from 2025 business comments. 2025, I think I marked a year of good achievement for our company with success for our strategy in the different technologies, with Immuno delivering a 7% growth, molecular diagnostic year-on-year flat, and we'll see later, primarily related to the fact that the flu season this year is has been very weak, and then LTG delivering to expectation flattish compared to previous year. And again, as we will discuss later, primarily due to the fact that on the life science segment, as I think is very well known by everybody, 2025 has not been an exciting year. Let me now turn to the specific technologies. Let's start from Immuno. It's very clear that Immuno, we always talk about the success of our hospital strategy. In the U.S., we have delivered the number of hospitals that was targeted. And actually, if I go back and think about the 2023 plan, LTP, what was when we deliver our targets for the hospital strategy, our what the company was looking for is to get to 600 hospitals by 2027. And actually, I believe we're going to get to 600 hospitals by the end of 2026. So this strategy has been extremely successful. By the same token, we continue to launch specialty assays, hepatitis delta, together with Gilead. We are the first and only company to have an FDA-approved hepatitis delta assay, which is a great opportunity in light of the expected approval of the new hepatitis delta drug. And the TRAB, which is an autoimmune assay, very specialistic. So we continue to fuel our Immuno franchise with specialty products. When it comes to molecular diagnostic, I will be more specific later, but we continue with the increasing and launch of the different panels on the Plex platform. Today we have 4 approved, and GI is submitted and expected to be approved in the next 60 to 90 days. We are, as you know, I remind everybody, as of today, we are focusing our effort just in the U.S. market. So when I will talk about Plex, just remember, is only the U.S., and we continue to deliver the customizable mini panel strategy. When it comes to NES, which is the small platform, as discussed already, we got approval of our respiratory panel. We have submitted our gas panel on NES, and we expect approval within H1 of 2026. We built a dedicated sales force in the U.S. of around 30 people with an investment with annualized is estimated to be around $10 million that will allow us to launch efficiently and effectively NES in the non-acute and acute space in the U.S. In parallel, we have signed up two major distributors, Fisher Scientific, that will work with our direct sales force in the acute hospital segment, and McKesson, I think the press release went out yesterday, that is taking the exclusive distribution of our liaison NES in the non-acute in the U.S., together with, again, the dedicated 30 people that we have hired to support. The business commercial launch is expected to be April 1st. Moving forward with the business, from a footprint organization, we have pretty much completed the phase out of our industrial plant in Germany, again, to streamline our manufacturing footprint. The all products manufacturing has been moved to Italy, and we are practically at the end of the process, and I would like to thank all our German employees that have been extremely collaborative and professionals in allowing the company to close the plant in good order and not to provide any disruption of supply to the customers. When it comes to Chicago and Cyprus, which are the two sites where we manufacture Plex and NES, we have completed all the investments, which have been in the order of $30 million, and now we have the capacity in place to sustain the launch of the two platforms. When it comes to China, we continue to see that the macro environment in China is actually not improving, to say the least. VBP policy now is adopted in all the provinces, but what we are seeing is that even in Shanghai and Beijing, that supposedly were not touched by VBP, now clearly VBP is also de facto applied into these very large markets, and so the effect of VBP will hit the China in its entirety. Because of that, and because of the fact that we honestly don't see for reassuring a space as a supplier of commodity non-specialty assays in China, we decided to close our manufacturing site in Shanghai and discontinue the local manufacturing project. Unfortunately, we are making that decision when we just got approval of all the products. But I think that, again, our view on the Chinese market continues to be very negative, and the ability to compete in that market with the two products, I don't think is there. Although, as I think we have discussed, we are now resorting to a different strategy, which is the specialty strategy in two areas. One is TB, where we are successful globally together with Kaiji, and the other one is on the GI immune strategy. We expect the TB product to be approved by the summer, so we will start our TB campaign in the summer, and the calprotectin assay to be approved within 2026, beginning of 2027. So again, China, we are redirecting the effort. We are taking away all costs associated with being a non-specialist player and investing to become a specialty player in that market, which we honestly believe is the only way for a company like DSRN to continue to survive and make good business in the Chinese market. When it comes to 2025, again, we have been experiencing, I think, overall headwinds and tailwinds. Let me remind everybody what happened last year. Tariffs clearly have been impacting the P&L last year, although we believe that those tariffs, which is in the range of $9 million, again, I'm talking about the cash component, we will be able to get them back sometimes in 2026, but last year they did impact our P&L. The NIH funding cuts did impact the business of our partners in life science, and in fact, this is the reason why we have a flat overall LTG business, which, as we have discussed a few times, is a combination of high single-digit growth of the diagnostic component, but high single-digit decline of the life science. We have been experiencing volume normalization in Europe, testing volume, and I'm using Germany as an example. Germany used to grow on an annualized rate around 6-7% from volume testing perspective at the end of 2024, beginning of 2025, and we actually saw that by the end of 2025, that is more around 1%. And I'm using Germany because it's a very large market, but I believe that this problem is actually replicating around Europe. And again, it's normalization clearly after the COVID effect, in my opinion. And then last but not least, the flu season, and no need to comment, but the flu season has been very poor in 2025, and also Q1 of 2026, we continue to see the same effect. And because of the fact that a good chunk of our business for molecular is flu, clearly we are tactically suffering from lack of revenues in this segment. From a tailwind perspective, clearly PAMA implementation has been delayed post-2026, and this has lowered the level of pressure on our customers. And so I believe that from a pricing perspective, we do not foresee an impact coming from PAMA. Now, let's dip a little bit more into the numbers, and let's look into immuno. Our immuno franchise, we like to look at total and then take out what we believe are the one-off effect. But if you look at the immuno franchise, full year growth 7%. If we take away two effects, which are China, the China decline, which was almost 18%, and the outbreak effect that we commented a few times, then the growth of the franchise would have been 9%, so it means that solid, healthy growth of our immuno business. North America continues to be one of the leading markets for the DiaSorin. We had full year growth of 15%, but if you look at quarter to quarter, quarter three, 14%, quarter four, 14%. So the performance of North America is clearly extremely solid there. Europe, we saw that by year-end, it's mid-single digit, which I think it's okay when it comes to the European market, which does have dynamics, as we know, of growth expectation, which are very different from the rest of the world. China has been very negative, and overall, during the year, we lost $8 million in China. In revenues, which is minus 19% versus prior year. Clearly, we saw this effect softening in Q4, but what we are seeing moving forward, though, is that this VBP effect, I think, will continue now into provinces that so far were not really touched by this. And so my view when it comes to 2026 certainly is not positive about this. If you look at molecular, as you know, our molecular business is fundamentally flat, but year-on-year, but with different components. Looking at the three different legs of the business, as you know, let me remind you, we look at the business as the what we call targeted, which is our molecular franchise that came in original from the DiaSorin and Focus. We have the franchise, which is the multiplexing franchise, and then we will have the NeST. If we now talk about the targeted franchise, we see that, which, I mean, overall is close to $100 million. There are three different segments into this. We have what we call specialty. The specialty targeted, which closed at around 40 million euro, annualized with a growth rate full year 2025 of over 35%. And by the way, fairly constant quarter to quarter, so this continue to drive the growth of the franchise. But by the same token, we have a respiratory component, which is 40% down compared to last year. The good news is that now it's becoming very small. It's between 10 million-15 million euros, but the seasonal effect has been so far very heavy because of the respiratory season. And finally, we have what we call ASR, which is again roughly 40 million, very profitable business, which are reagents that we sell to laboratory in the U.S., roughly 200 customers, to do LTD assays in the U.S., which is flat and not expected clearly to be a significant growth driver, but is a very significant profit and very profitable business for the DiaSorin. And on top of that, is allowing us typically to launch as LDTs some of the specialty assays, and then meanwhile file with run clinicals and get the FDA approval that then will allow us to move to the full kit. So this franchise, I believe, is solid and will continue to deliver the growth, transforming the business from very dependent on respiratory to fundamentally very to be very dependent from the growth of specialties. The second segment is the multiplexing. The multiplexing for us is the combination of Verogen 1 plus the LIAISON PLEX. Full year growth of this business, all in, has been around 9%. Clearly, there has been an effect here, which has to do a lot, again, with flu and the flu season in two ways. The business that we had with Verogen 1 had a flu component, but more than anything else, all the LIAISON PLEX business that we actually are building, it's all a respiratory for a very simple reason, that we just got blood in mid of 2025. So it's very clear that we have a double whammy situation in this case. So if we look at the LIAISON PLEX per se, we had an objective to close 150 customers in the U.S., and in fact, we closed 147, which so we are at target. We have placed roughly 1,000 systems with these customers in the U.S. Again, this is U.S. only, because we did not make this platform available outside the U.S. 40% of the contracts that we close are fixed and 60% are flex, which means now that and the weight of the flex business is increasing clearly, because all the new placements we are making are fundamentally based on flexibility on building the mini panels. If you look at customer split, 90% are hospitals and 10% are commercial labs. Clearly, if we look at the revenue contribution so far, commercial labs represents a little bit over 50% of the business, and this is because of the fact that we closed some very large contracts. in commercial, and namely the one that was made public was the Quest agreement, where Quest now has transitioned to the LIAISON PLEX platform for all the respiratory business. GI panel clearance, as said, expected in the next 60 to 90 days, and this clearly will accelerate penetration in the U.S., in the U.S. hospitals, also because the GI panel is the one that allows to the full extent the use of the mini panel, customized mini panel concept. When it comes to the non-automated business, which is the legacy business left, clearly is left unattended, is declining minus 6% full year. And is supposed to continue to decline simply because this is a business that we're not invested in, is a cash cow, and still very profitable with, like all the cash cow businesses. LTG, we spoke about the LTG before, is a very, so it's a 50-50 business. As you know, the split is 50% diagnostic, 50% life science. When it comes to the diagnostic business, grew 9% last year. But when it comes to the life science business, it actually declined 9%. And this is why it made the LTG business fundamentally flat. We'll talk about the expectations for this business in 2026, but I believe that in 2026 we are expecting moderate growth, primarily driven by the fact that there are initial signals that the life science business is going to do better than last year. Also because, in full honesty, last year was, for everybody in the business, a very terrible year, right? And so recovery of that business is mathematically expected. At this point, I believe that I will let PG take care of the comments on the financials, and then I'll make some further remarks. PG.
Thank you, Carlo, and welcome, everyone. As Carlo said, to our 2025 fourth quarter earnings conference call. As usual, during the next few minutes, I will provide an overview of our financial performance for the full year, after which, as Carlo just reminded us, he and Alberto will cover 2026 guidance. And we will then proceed to the usual Q&A session. So, 2025 full-year revenues were just short of $1.2 billion, reflecting a 1% or $10 million increase compared to the same period last year. This performance was achieved notwithstanding a 13 million euro reduction in COVID-related sales, once again as expected, and a 34 million euro negative impact from foreign exchange rate, primarily due to the depreciation of the U.S. dollar against the euro, as we have discussed many times during our last earnings calls. Excluding COVID and at constant exchange rate, our core business has achieved a 5% full-year growth, therefore in line with the guidance. Carlo previously outlined the factors contributing to this performance, the robust results from the immuno franchise, despite the challenges in China and the outbreaks in Europe in 2024, normalization within the LTG franchise, following a favorable phasing in the first half of 2025, and a stable trajectory for the overall molecular business, which has been negatively impacted by a very mild start of the flu season. And as you might remember, the discontinuation of the ARIES platform. 2025 adjusted gross profit at 778 million euro accounted for 65% of our revenues. These represent a decrease of 4 million euro or 1% compared to 2024, mainly driven by tariff impact, which at the P&L level in the year accounted for 4 million euro, a different product mix, and the negative FX impact. At constant exchange rate, the adjusted gross profit would have increased by almost 20 million euro or 2%. Adjusted operating expenses for the full year were 474 million euro, marking a 1% decrease from the previous period, whereas at constant exchange rate, the expenses increased by 1%. As a percentage of revenues, OPEX declined to 39%, down from 40% in 2024. The small rise in absolute value at constant exchange rate was mainly due to the higher labor costs from the annual salary review and increased depreciation tied to the recent product and platform launches, including the Liaison Plex, which had been previously in development. This minimal increase reflects our disciplined approach to cost management. I'd also like to address the reported statutory operating expenses, which in Q4 have been impacted by the initiation of the divestiture plan of our manufacturing site in China that Carlo just talked about. This project will be completed by the end of 2026. These initiatives, which was prompted by material change in the Chinese market, as we heard, is consistent with the DSR's ongoing strategy to optimize our global manufacturing footprint, like previous actions such as the divestiture of our Irish and South African facilities and the commissioning of our manufacturing site in Germany. These steps demonstrate our continued effort to adapt to the evolving macroeconomic conditions and enhance our long-term competitiveness. We anticipate that the one-off charge related to the full scope of this initiative will not exceed 22 million euro, 20 million of which have been booked in Q4 25, with the vast majority being non-cash costs, primarily intangible and fixed assets write-off. The monetary total impact will be less than 3 million euro. We estimate that this initiative will bring an annualized saving, once completed, of about 6 million euro. As a result of these dynamics, 2025 adjusted EBIT reached 304 million, representing 25% of revenues, confirming the profitability we had in 2024. This reflects an increase at constant exchange rate of 13 million euro or 4% compared to the same period last year, whereas the result at current FX is in line with 2024. Adjusted interest expenses for the full year were slightly above 1 million compared to an income of 4 million in 2024. The primary factor behind this variance was a reduction in our cash balances and investment yields, reflecting the decline in interest rates. As discussed in previous earnings calls, the normalized tax rate has adjusted to 25% following the conclusion of the patent box regime for our Italian legal entity. For the full year 2025, the tax rate is about 29%, and this is due to a couple of one-off events that occurred in the fourth quarter, the most significant impact resulting from the withholding tax on dividends from the U.S. subsidiary and the impact of not accrued taxes deduction of the impairment costs related to the divestiture of the Chinese manufacturing site, in light of the limited visibility on future taxable profits in our Chinese legal entity. These items are not expected to occur again in 2026. So we will go back to a normalized tax rate of 25% in 2026. 2025 adjusted net results at 223 million euro or 19% of revenues is lower than 24 by 13 million euro or 6%, as a combination of a negative FX impact accounting for 12 million euro and higher interest and tax rate expenses. The adjusted EBITDA for the full year 2025 is 394 million euro, accounting for 33% of total revenues, therefore in line both in absolute with the absolute figure and revenue ratio recorded in 2024. At constant effects, adjusted EBITDA reports an increase over 2024 by 15 million or 4%. The margin is slightly exceeding 33% and in line with the annual guidance. Q4 25 profitability at constant exchange rate, just short of 32%, is about 140 basis points lower than the corresponding period in 2024, mainly due to the variations in product mix and the impact of the tariffs, which accounted for 2 million or thereabout in the quarter. Before turning to the net financial position, let me share a brief comment on the tariff situation in the U.S. On March the 5th, the U.S. Court of International Trade, so-called CIT, issued a nationwide order requiring U.S. Customs and Border Protection to refund IEEPA-based tariffs following the U.S. Supreme Court's February 20th ruling that the IEEPA does not authorize tariff actions. The order applies to all importers, thereof to the Azorin as well. The Court of International Trade has given Custom Border Protection 45 days to prepare the system for this activity. We will keep on monitoring the evolution of this very complicated situation and update investors consequently. As of today, the potential P&L upside related to 2025 tariffs is about 4 million, as we said, plus 1 to 2 million for the first 2 months of 2026. From March on, IEEPA tariffs have been replaced by the new tariff scheme imposed under Section 122, which is included in our 2026 guidance. Turning to our net financial position, we closed 2025 with a net debt amounting to 580 million, with an improvement of 38 million compared to the same to the end of 2024. This reflects a solid free cash flow of just short of 210 million, compensated by cash outflows, including 97 million in payments to shareholders exercising withdrawal rights after the recent implementation of the enhanced voting rights mechanism, as well as 63 million distributed as dividends to our shareholders. Before Carlo and Alberto present the 2026 guidance, I'd like to share a few personal remarks. As you might know, this is going to be my last earning course in the Azorin, since in April I'll be moving to a different professional chapter of my life. As I wrap up my time here, I just want to say a big thank you to all my Azorin colleagues, my super amazing team, Carlo, obviously, and the whole board. The last 15 years have been an incredible ride, full of teamwork, growth, achievements that I will always remember. The Azorin has been like a second home to me throughout these years, and I have every confidence that it will continue to excel and accomplish even greater things in the future. I'm also certain that Alberto, who has been an integral part of my team since I joined the Azorin, will be an outstanding CFO. And to all the analysts and investors I've gotten to know over the years, it's been a real pleasure interacting with you. Thank you for your insight and open and constructive dialogue. I wish you guys the best going forward.
Thank you, PG. Clearly, this is a very emotional moment for everybody here. PG reminded me today that when he joined the Azorin 15 years ago, our revenues were less than our OPEX today, which clearly shows that the company grew significantly, and PG was very instrumental to work with us during these very interesting times. By the same token, I would like to welcome Alberto Donati, who is stepping in effectively today as the CFO of this organization. And as all the CFOs, it's going to be the duty and honor now to help us out to understand the guidance for 2026. Alberto.
Thank you, Carlo, and thank you, Pili. Good morning and good afternoon, everyone. I will now walk you through our guidance for 2026, which, as usual, will be expressed at a constant exchange rate using 2025 as a reference year. Now, before getting into the numbers, allow me to briefly frame the macroeconomic environment we are operating in, as 2026 will be characterized by some headwinds in the first part of the year. Specifically, we do expect a slower start of the year in the United States, and this is because they're partly impacted by the critical weather conditions in the first quarter, as well as a much weaker flu season, as has already been reported by many of our peers, which is weighing on our respiratory testing in the early part of the year. We also see a continued normalization of the volume in Europe, which is consistent with the trend already observed in the second half of 2025. With all of this being said, for the full year of 2026, we expect the group revenues to grow between 5 and 6% at a constant exchange rate. As a reminder, this includes COVID sales, which were included in the 4% growth of 2025, so 5% for 2025 was excluding COVID. We are now giving the guidance including COVID, but we do expect COVID sales to continue to deteriorate. From a quarterly standpoint, 2026 will be back-end loaded. So we expect a softer first half, primarily explained by two factors. First, the LTG business was significantly front-loaded in 2025, as mentioned during last year conference calls and as reminded by Carlo early on, resulted in a tough comparison in the early part of 2026. Secondly, the flu season has been especially weak in the first quarter of 2026, which, while we have embedded in our numbers a normal season for the second half of 2026. Additionally, considering the liaison-ness with the launch of the ABCR panel and the liaison plex having the complete panel available in the second half with GI, those will primarily contribute in the second half of the year, which naturally is shifting a meaningful portion of the molecular diagnostic growth towards the back end of the year. From a profitability standpoint, we expect the group to deliver an adjusted EBITDA margin between 32 and 33% in 2026, and again, as usual, this is a constant exchange rate. This reflects the combination of a softer first half driven by business facing and the product timing, and the commercial investments we made to ensure the successful launch of the NEST platform, again, as mentioned by Carlo earlier, north of $10 million. We do expect that the progressive improvement in the second half of the year, supported by the volume recovery, the operating leverage, and the contribution for the, from the new product launches. Please consider that 2026 guidance does not take into account any potential negative impact related to the ongoing military conflict in the Middle East, which could affect the group sales in the region. It also excludes any possible indirect effect of the conflict, including the increasing logistical and distribution complexities, the potentially extending to the Asia-Pacific region, as well as inflationary pressures on cost. And before concluding, let me just reiterate that Dyson remains highly exposed to the USD, with approximately 50% of the group revenues, which are denominated in USD. And as a reminder, a rule of thumb is that every 1 cent movement of the USD versus euro has an impact of approximately 6 to 7 million on an annualized revenues and 2 to 3 million on our adjusted EBITDA. I will now turn it to the operator for the Q&A.
This is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. We kindly ask you to pick up your phone when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Aisyah Noor, Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. My first one is on the immunodiagnostics guidance of mid-single-digit growth. for 2026, which is a slowdown from 2025 of 7%. Can you explain why this is a slowdown if the China VBP impact is smaller year over year? And then my second question is on the McKesson partnership that you signed yesterday. What do you think will incentivize McKesson to push your products more strongly versus the competitor, Spotfire? Are you pricing it competitively? Is there higher fees to this partner? Basically, how do you ensure the success of this partnership? And then I'll have a follow-up after.
Thank you, Aisha. Let me take the two questions. The immunoassay projection in 2026 foresees a normalization of testing volumes. As I said, we saw it progressively softening during 2025, and I'm talking about Europe, and therefore we expect that this will have an effect in 2026, meaning that this is going to be the normal volume effect that we would expect in immunoassay. Please consider that in Europe is 50% of the immunoassay revenues, so it does have an impact. Second question on McKesson. Look, these distributor platforms, they carry instruments from different companies. That is true. Although I believe that when we look at the POL market, there is what we, and, you know, we mapped all the POLs in the U.S. by size. We believe today that there is a great opportunity provided by the fact that in the low-mid volume POLs, there is no platform today, and I'm talking about modern platform that can serve that segment. And so we're talking about customers that are consuming between 500 to 1,500 test, total flu test per year. And we also saw in the market that the positioning of the Spotfire actually is on the higher segment of the market, including where you find Cepheid, where you find also Abbott ID Now. Whereas in the lower, smaller side of this business, you find ID Now, and you know that today ID Now is the platform everybody's going after because it's a very, very old technology and really is not serving the purpose of this market. To be honest with you, when we went to McKesson, so we are learning this space. This is not a traditional space for the Sorin, and we actually understood that the way we look at the market, so positioning of the product in a certain segment is exactly the reason why McKesson was looking at getting our platform exclusively for distribution. We have an exclusive relationship with them, clearly with a minimum commitment that they need to guarantee for retaining the exclusivity. You asked for about McKesson, right? No Fisher. So that's the answer for McKesson.
Yes, I did. Thanks. And just to follow up, maybe a question for Alberto. Could you give us some guidance on the FX impact on sales and EBITDA margin for the 2026 fiscal year?
Yep. So from an EBITDA perspective, just as a reminder, we did give the guidance at a constant exchange rate. What do we expect? We expect, as you know, as I reminded before, the impact for us is 2 to 3 million every cent movement that we have. Now, in 2025, the impact on our top line was 35 million, and at the bottom line was around 15 million in 2025. Allows us some flexibility in 2026 as we don't know where the dollar is going to be given the uncertainties of the market. So at the moment, the guidance is a constant exchange rate, knowing that for every cent movement, we have a 2 to 3 million impact on our adjusted EBITDA.
Aisha, if I can step in, you know, if you look at the latest Bloomberg consensus for the FX rate for 2026, and again, a lot of things are happening, but what you find today is 118, right? So since the average exchange rate for 2025 was 113, applying the rule that Alberto told you about, you would expect a negative FX impact on the top line of 35 million euro, right? Which is the difference from 118 to 113 times 7, which is the 6-7 million Alberto was talking about on the top line. And I believe this is important for you guys to understand and master, otherwise it's going to create some complications when you will be working on your model and, you know, defining your consensus. Whereas if you go to the EBITDA level, again, it's 2-3 million times this 5 we were talking about, so you get to top 15 million. So at the end of the day, if you believe Bloomberg forecast for 2026, eventually the FX impact on 2026 vis-à-vis 2025 is going to be similar to what we experienced in 2025 vis-à-vis 2024.
Okay, thank you so much, PG. All the best, PG.
The next question is from Odysseas Manesiotis, BNP Paribas Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. Firstly, I wanted to get a bit of a feeling of what was the main driver for your growth expectations to be lower than what they were in Q3. I remember you were saying high single-digit growth was possible in 26 in Q3. I want to get the feeling of the key drivers of lowering your expectations there. Was it, I'm thinking, is there a bit of a small delay on the CalPro 3 launch, lower expectations on the NES, or further pressures in China, Germany, and then Europe? Sort of what are the main drivers here? And then I have a follow-up.
Listen, if I understood correctly, you were talking about the comment on high single-digit total business growth 2026 expectations, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I made a comment before. Two things. We are starting Q1 with a very, very low respiratory season, which is not what were clearly built in the expectation Q3 last year when we were commenting the 2026 numbers. You saw that from comments and commentaries which have been made by some of our competitors that the flu season is 25 to 50% lower than last year. So very significant, which was not built in clearly in our expectations. The second one is the fact that in the European volume, we saw it decreasing also in Q4. As I told you, I gave you a number. Now we are at average 1% growth. We were sitting mid-year with annualized around 3.5%, right? So there is a normalization, so-called, of volumes that now we have seen and we expect to see moving forward. Last but not least, and again, I'm referring to commentaries which have been made by some of the large U.S. operators, namely Quest and LabCorp. Q1 volumes, testing volume in the U.S. have been particularly low, and this is because of a very severe weather situation. Please go and listen to what Quest and LabCorp mentioned about Q1 that are still affected today. Those volumes are still affecting some of the U.S. business these days. This is why we believe that high single digit is not achievable and 5 and 6% are more realistic. With all due respect, though, guys, I think that Alberto made a good point. We are where we are as we sit in Q1 in after 20 days of war. And so making a projection
of what is going to happen at this point on the, from a costing point of view, is mission impossible. Okay, so from what we understand today, we believe that the business is going to grow 5 to 6%, and we believe, as Alberto clearly explained, is backloaded as a combination of mathematics on LTG, so tough comp, H1 versus H1, and the fact that H1 will completely miss the flu numbers.
Thank you very much. That's very clear, Carlo. And on energy and logistics, I mean, I understand, as you said, it's a bit mission impossible to give specific guidance, including these. But just to get a sense of how bad this may get for you, I mean, your consumables, are these largely made of oil-based plastics? And historically, in times of higher energy prices, were you able to pass through costs comfortably to customers? I remember that may have not been the case. Is that correct?
Okay, listen, I'm going to give you a rule of thumb. If the cost of energy stays where it is today, right, so with the oil being over $100, to us the impact on energy and logistics is around $5 million. Okay? But my problem, to be honest with you, is not necessarily with energy and logistic, because the logistic issue, if it doesn't solve, I think that we have a whole set of different problems, right? Today, the logistic issue is that we cannot ship to Dubai, and we were shipping pretty much not only Middle East, but we are shipping Asia through Dubai, but that will be solved. To me, the real problem is the inflation on the raw material, as we all know, and that is a complete different order of magnitude, because it has to do with all the plastic and all the oil derivatives that everybody in this industry is using, right? And to make a projection there is really mission impossible. But again, energy and logistics is around $5 million.
Thanks a lot for the clarity, Carlo, and PG. It was great working with you. I wish you all the best with the new role.
Thank you, Odysseus. Likewise, great working with you.
The next question is from Jan Koch, Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my questions. Thanks for providing the comments on the sales phasing in 2026. But what about profitability? Margins have been usually higher in H1 than in H2. Is this still the case in 2026? And then secondly, you have provided the growth rates of your automated multiplexing business in recent quarters. Could you provide that comment for Q4 as well? And finally, one housekeeping question. Could you help us with the expected DNA ratio in 2026 in view of the upcoming Plex and Nest placements?
Sorry, can you repeat the last question?
DNA ratio in 2026, I guess. The depreciation and amortization,
yeah.
I guess.
Absolutely.
DNA.
Okay. First two questions.
First one was profitability phasing. I guess Alberto can take
it,
right?
So as mentioned before, within the 32 to 33%, we have to take into consideration a few effects. First is that we do have a full year effect on the tariffs. We do also have a mixed effect, since we know that the molecular growth growing low double digit brings lower marginality, which is dilutive to the gross margin. And the Nest investment, Carlo mentioned it before, north of $10 million, which brings us a natural underabsorption in the year of the launch, plus the further deterioration of the of China due to the VBP and the continuous pressure from locals and on pricing, is posing us pressure on the EBITDA margin overall, but especially considering the tough comparison of the FTG in the first half, we do expect to see the EBITDA to be softer in the first half as a function of fundamentally the lower sales on FTG and the operating leverage, and we then expect the EBITDA to recover in the second half as an improvement supported by the volume that is recovering, again, as I mentioned, the operating leverage and the contribution of the new product launches.
I guess the second question was growth rate automated. in Q4, the automated multiplex. Right, Ian?
Yeah, absolutely, the growth rate.
Well, the growth rate in Q4, as said, was, I believe, slightly negative, minus five.
Minus five.
But it's all flu volume. It's all related because placements, I give you a number of placements, but you can assume that the placements develop regularly. But from a revenue perspective, minus 3%,
it's
right?
Minus two. It's minus two, Carlo, the right number. It's
okay.
On the presentation.
So minus two, but fundamentally is all respiratory driven, all volume effect.
Jan, the last question related to the precision amortization, if I understand correctly. So you know that we've been launching two platforms between 2025 and 2026. So we do see an increase of the depreciation amortization linked to the start of the depreciation of all the tangible and intangible that are linked to the launch of the Nest platform.
Okay, thank you. All the best, PG.
Thank you, Ian. You as well.
The next question is from Kavya Deshpande, UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, Carlo, PG, and hi, Alberto. Thank you for taking my questions. My first one is just on the revenue guidance. So you've been very clear about the headwinds that get you to the 5% scenario. I was just wondering the top end of that, the 6% growth scenario. Is that including what, in your view, is sort of the full contribution of all the potential product tailwinds you've got from the Plex panels, from, I guess, to a lesser extent, Ness, because it's early, and from Quantiferon Gold Plus, et cetera? And then, Carlo, actually, one for you on China. I mean, you've made a big step in terms of changing your strategy here, but I suppose, what are you seeing on the ground that's making you think this is kind of still an attractive market for Diasorin to stay in? And also, would it be possible to specify the exact China headwind you expect for 2026? I understand if not, but I thought I'd try.
Specifying the exact headwind, look, as I said, in 2025 was around 8 million, right? And caveat, I believe in 2026, it could be in the order of magnitude of 5 million. But again, it's a toss of a coin because the truth of the matter is that we were expecting VBP to be done and over with fundamentally, and now what's happening is that VBP de facto is also hitting Shanghai and Beijing. Shanghai and Beijing are clearly, as you can imagine, big business opportunity for us. But if you're asking me, is there an opportunity for the soaring in China? I believe it's very tactical short term. I see a market that is becoming extremely competitive, but competitive meaning, as you know, that when you have the market leader that is living on the ground 500 million Swiss francs in revenues in 1 year, which is 20% down, I think, of that total revenues, the market is becoming a terrible market where everybody is chasing all the opportunities with desperation on price. So there's a VBP concept. It's fundamentally has been driving all companies to go after all the business with a very low price. And this is why I'm saying we came to the conclusion that what we were thinking in 2019, when all this started and nothing of this was there, and there was a very large, significant, profitable opportunity with mainstream products, evaporated. And now, since the only opportunity for us is to become a specialty
company. And there are a couple of areas where the specialty is significant. You are left now with the fact that now manufacturing a specialty in China is dangerous because, as you know, nobody is guaranteeing you know-how. But by the same token, it's not needed because at that point, a specialty being a specialty, if there's no VBP, there is no very high local competition. So the added value of being local manufacturer is not there. It would be only increase the risk of losing control of your technology. So this is China. On the revenue guidance caveat, you said on the 6%. I believe that we have high, you know, 2026 is a very important year for the Sorin because we have the launch of NES. Okay, and we will discuss in May about expectations, strategic expectation on NES for the Sorin. As you can imagine, as you saw from bioMérieux as well, the expectation is very relevant for us because the market opportunity is very relevant because the window, I believe, is the right window because an opportunity within the next 3 years to get to the market also with SDI and tap into that business as well. And so certainly the 6% includes the fact that that there is an additional technology and product line that will help us drive revenues next year. As said, by the same token, it does foresee that the volume effect that we experience in different geographies is fundamentally, it went back to where it used to be pre-COVID.
The next question is from Charles Pitman King, Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for taking my questions. I have two, please. Maybe just firstly, just wondering around how you're thinking in your guidance around the outlook for your LTB revenues, given Roche is expected to launch in the space soon, and that I believe is expected to bring in some pricing pressure. So if you could just quantify again what revenue you're currently generating from TB and how you expect to kind of continue to grow through this over 2026. And then just secondly, coming back to your LGG revenues, you kind of highlighted that we've seen improving commentary for life science peers, but obviously 25 was a bit of a balance of life science down, diagnostics up. Just wondering how you expect diagnostics to also be improving and whether or not you think that will be whether both end markets will improve to drive better growth for LTG this year. Thank you.
Okay. Listen, clearly we are not going to disclose what are the revenue of LTB, of tuberculosis. That's confidential information, especially in light of the fact that Roche supposedly launching the product. How do I so the question is, what is your expectation about Roche on the market? I don't know because I don't know when they're launching, if they're launching, and what they're launching. So hold your thoughts until May 13, because May 12, Roche is going to have their analyst day, and they're going to talk about the good, bad, and ugly about diagnostics, right? So, we are going to, a week later on the 20th, we're going to talk about LTP, and there you're going to hear about what we assume about the Roche effect. Just one comment. Remember that the only thing that Roche said is that they're not going to lower price. Keep that in mind when we will see what happens when they hit the market. Okay, but if you go to their market day, ask them if it is true that they're not planning to lower the price. LTG, our diagnostic business, is very healthy and somehow decorrelated from what you have seen in diagnostic because we are serving a couple of players that dominate their space. In one Lambda, which is one of our customers today in diagnostic multiplexing, they have 80% market share in transplant. And that business is a solid business that is growing single digit simply because the transplant number is growing. So This is why I'm saying I'm not expecting to see a negative effect on the diagnostic side. By the same token, the life science business, as you very well know, was so poor in 2025, right? And we see that all that and fundamentally was driven by the U.S. market and fundamentally was driven by this NIH mumbo-jumbo. At least that NIH situation has been clarified. We know that funding has been guaranteed. We know that customers are applying for funding. And what we know is that investments, if you look at 2025, we were hit most on equipment, right? And this is simply because with this uncertainty on funds, labs and academia was not buying systems. What we are seeing is that the funnel on instruments is actually coming back, okay, from a very poor situation. Now, this is why I'm saying my LTG expectation from in 2026 is that we're going to have a moderate growth. But please listen to what the Thermo, the Millipore, the Biotechnique, and all these guys are saying, because they're all DSR and Luminex customers.
That's great. Thanks so much, and all the best, TG.
Thank you.
The next question is from Natalia Webster, RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I have three, please. The first is a follow-up on margins. Appreciating the various effects like tariffs in China to consider in 2026, but what else has changed from your previous expectations to reach the 36 to 37% level by 2027? And do you still expect margin expansion beyond 2026 with the continued dilution from the molecular growth? My second question is on immuno guidance of the mid-single digits in 26. Again, looking beyond this, once the European volumes have normalized, do you see potential for this to pick up back to the high single digit levels that you've seen previously? And do you see that double digit growth in North America specifically as sustainable going forwards, considering there's a couple of delays on a couple of the key specialty tests that you called out previously? And then finally, on your Plex platform, are you able to talk a bit more about what you're seeing in the competitive landscape here? You've talked about the GI panel being important for more adoption in inpatient settings. Is this the main barrier there? Have you seen any pushback on other areas like the longer time to result versus competitors? Thank you.
Okay, I'll take the last one.
Okay.
Right, on Plex. If I understood correctly, you want to understand the competitive landscape. In my very humble opinion, the competitive landscape did not change at all, meaning that you have bioMérieux that is dominating the space with, and now we're talking about the acute space or the hospital market, because Plex goes on the acute space. So from a competitive space, we are where we are. We honestly don't see in the U.S. QIAGEN today as a competitor, also because QIAGEN so far has been very active and successful outside of the U.S., and they're building, I believe, their presence in the U.S. market. And so the competitor you need to go after in this place is always bioMérieux. On the time to result in this space, 1 hour, 2 hours doesn't make any difference, to be honest with you, because you're talking about hospitalized patients or you're talking about commercial labs, right? And a commercial lab is a send out sample, and so it does it. So they collect, they get the result, and they ship back in within one shift. So 1 hour, 2 hours doesn't make a bit of a difference. Clearly, I'm not referring now to the Spotfire, which is a 30-minute assay, but that goes into a different segment, and there is where we compete with the liaison-less that does have same or better time to first result. On the GI, I'm saying that, as I think I always commented, that when it comes to the adoption of mini panels, so the ability actually not to run all the 20 some analytes, but build mini panels, GI is where you have most variability of panels because of the use of these different panels, which can be associated with dietary, which can be associated to infections, which can be associated with travel, bugs, you know, bugs that you get into funny countries during travel. So we estimate that in that sense you have 7-8 different panels that you really need to build in order to segment the different clinical clinical situations that a doctor would have to face when it comes to GI infections. When volume, I believe your question is, do you see volume going up? And my answer is no, I don't. I believe that we're going to go back to where volume was prior to COVID and whatever happened after COVID, and primarily, in my opinion, driven by a combination of things. One is that is an economic situation. Volume typically reflects, because there is a portion of this diagnostic procedure that is paid directly by patients off pocket everywhere in the world. I have in mind Italy, where of if the healthcare budget is 140 billion euro, the government pays for 110 and people chip in for 30 billion. So the viability of patients to pay off pocket really is very well correlated to how economies are doing, and I don't think that moving forward, from what we see today, economies are going to do great, right? So I don't see that incentive more off pocket to drive up volume. And again, we are going back to where we were prior to COVID, where it was expected that in the developed market, on average, volume would grow around 1-2%, which is where fundamentally we are today. On margins, Alberto, can you please comment?
Thank you, Carlo. Natalia, Alberto speaking. So on your question on EBITDA and the comparison with the 2023 plan of getting to 36% in 2027, please consider that we are fundamentally living in a different world, and I'm specifically referring to the macroeconomic and industry events, some of which are outside of Dyson control. Specifically, let me start with the China VBP. Carlo mentioned the impact that we had, which is around 1% of our top line, and this is primarily due to price reductions, which go directly to the bottom line. The second one is the NIH funding, which is affecting the growth of the RTG, not only on instruments at the beginning, but there is a consequence also on the other product lines of the franchise, being the consumables and the royalties, for a franchise that has a high marginality, and tariffs. Additionally, also the company has decided to increase the spending and the investment of NES in order to ensure the success of the launch. So taking all of the above into consideration, the base business is at the moment delivering the marginality that we are expecting, but for 2027 onward, please wait for the Capital Market Day when we were going to give our view until 2030.
Great, thank you. And just on the North American immuno business, growing double digits, do you see this as sustainable going forward, particularly with the specialty tests that you talked about previously?
Can you please wait for May, because we're going to go and through all the drivers of growth. Overall, I believe that North America, again, growth in North America, if you think about it, has been driven by hospital strategy plus high penetration in the big labs, right, which is today our business. TB certainly has been a growth driver for the company. And TB growth went high double digit today to whatever number QIAGEN is saying, because I keep saying it's a QIAGEN business, right? So I would recommend that as far as TB, you wait from QIAGEN to comment, and what they say clearly is applicable to DiaSorin. As far as the hospital strategy, we will continue to deliver the hospital strategy. As said, as far as the big laboratory business, I recommend that you listen to what they say, generally speaking, about their volumes, because, again, their volume is our testing volume in this segment. In order to get a more strategic qualified by product line and expectations, I believe you need to wait for the May discussion.
Understood. Thank you, and all the best, PG.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time. I turn the conference back to you for any closing remarks.
Thank you, operator. I think we're done. Thanks.